Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. You can find out more at my website, allbook-books.com. I wasn't planning to do a part four, but then I remembered some good quotes and a book that I want to feature. It's from 1999, and it's by Gore Vidal, called Sexually Speaking, Collected Sex Writing, Collection of Essays and Interviews. So it's been a while since I've looked at it. I think it's still pertinent, especially in this day and age where, with all the LGBTQIA, whatever other letter you want to put there, which I respect, whatever people want to do, is interesting, especially in context of this quote by Gore Vidal. Actually, there is no such thing as a homosexual person any more than there is such a thing as a heterosexual person. The words are adjectives describing sexual acts, not people. The sexual acts are entirely normal. If they were not, no one would perform them. So I think that's a very significant quote because, so in the context of all the LGBTQIA, I think it's fascinating because there's this incessant need to label oneself, which I respect people's choices, but I think that maybe the over-attention to labeling oneself is missing some other level of self-identity, which ties into the topic of sacred sexuality, because essentially we are, as the Police band sang with Sting years ago, we are spirits in the material world. So in that sense, sexuality can be seen like we are. People have been missing the looking for the spirit in the meat, if I can put it that way, as a simplest way that I could say that we have those phrases like meat market and, you know, commodification and this and that. But as with any being, whether a tree, a dog, the grass on the lawn, and the person you want to have sex with, there is spirit in the meat. And if sexuality is approached from that angle, I think is a different things happen. Just a few quotes from Vidal's book. Because in previous ones I was mentioning the temple prostitutes, so he has a reference here. It says, as for the prostitutes themselves, and this may be up to date too, as some are calling themselves sex workers nowadays. As for the prostitutes themselves, they practice an art as legitimate as any other, somewhere between that of masseur and psychiatrist. The best are natural healers, and contrary to tribal superstition, they often enjoy their work. So I think that's an aspect that gets overlooked, the healing aspect of sexuality. And then along those lines, this goes back in historical times. In earlier days, Jonathan and David were much admired. Was their celebrated love for each other an abomination? Obviously not. The clue to the mystery is the word abomination, which derives from the Hebrew word T-O-E-B-A-H, meaning idolatrous. At the time of Leviticus and long before, the great goddess was worshipped throughout the Middle East. She had many names, Sibel, Astarte, Diana, Anahita. Since the Jews thought that the great goddess was in direct competition with their great god, they denounced her worshippers as idolatrous or abominable, and particularly disapproved of the ritual sex associated with her worship. Many of Sibel's admirers castrated themselves for her glory, while male and female prostitutes crowded the temple precincts ready for action. In Babylon, every respectable woman was obliged to go at least once in a lifetime to the temple and prostitute herself to the first pilgrim who was willing to pay her. According to Herodotus, ill-favored women were obliged to spend an awful lot of time at the temple, trying to turn that reluctant trick which would make them blessed in the eyes of the goddess. No doubt many Jews in Babylon were attracted, if not to the goddess's worship, to the sexual games that went on in her temples. Therefore, the authors of Leviticus made it clear that any Jew who went with a male or female temple prostitute was guilty of an idolatrous or abominable act in the eyes of the great god Jehovah, a notoriously jealous god by his own admission. As a result, the abominations in Leviticus refer not to sexual acts as such, but to sexual acts associated with the cult of the great goddess. Now that's exactly what I was getting at when I had said that I had read in the, I think it was the Psychiatric Diagnostic Manual, that the whole, like especially Christianity and now, you know, Judeo-Christianity, this whole repression of sexuality is not directly about sexuality, but about freedom to choose where one aligns one's spirituality. I don't like the word worship because it puts it out, puts it something outside of oneself, but where one chooses to put one's energy and with what spiritual energy one chooses to align. And this ties in also with, again, what I've heard many times from indigenous peoples, that you can see the way a culture treats their women is how they treat the Mother Earth. So again, it's a distraction. The whole focus on the sexuality is really a distraction from the spirituality. Repeat that line. As a result, the abominations in Leviticus refer not to sexual acts as such, but to sexual acts associated with the cult of the great goddess. So there again, the feminine has been squelched and suppressed. And I think that's led to the polarization where the, you know, men look to women. Women become the only way that they can get in touch with their femininity. If that's the only way men can get in touch with their femininity, it creates incredible amount of dependence and need, which would give a quote reason for all the atrocities of rape and such like, because the men, having been squelched, having their energy access to their own femininity within themselves has been culturally and religiously and societally repressed. So in that sense, it's again, quote, normal that in seeking energy and that pleasure, they are desperate. And so they, you know, that's where it gets distorted. So if men, for example, were allowed to get in touch with their femininity, and I guess also women with their masculinity, we would certainly have less of these troubles. And I think that is what is some of what is happening with all the LGBTQIA stuff that is going on, because it's like people are searching for their sexual identity. There's a recent article in USA Today. A record 7.1% of U.S. adults now identify as LGBTQ. The 7.1 is double the percentage from 2012, when Gallup first measured identity, and is up over last year's poll that showed 5.6% of adults as LGBTQ. And that the other striking part of this, about 21% of Generation Z Americans, those born from 97 to 2003, identified as LGBTQ in this year's poll. 21%. Identifying as one out of five people. Among millennials born between 81 and 96, 10.5% identified as LGBTQ. Nearly one in six Gen Z also identifies as bisexual. So those are pretty astounding statistics, I think, and that shows this, I think, moving away from the thousands of years of sociocultural, sexual, whatever. And quote here from Vidal, again tying into this repression and relating to Leviticus. In the Symposium, Plato defined the problem, quote, in Ionia and other places and generally in countries which are subject to the barbarians. Plato is referring to the Persians, who were the masters of the Jews at the time Leviticus was written. The custom, homosexuality, is held to be dishonorable. Loves of youths share the evil repute in which philosophy and gymnastics are held, because they are inimical to tyranny. The interests of rulers require that their subjects should be poor in spirit, and that there should be no strong bond of friendship or society among them, which love, above all other motives, is likely to inspire, as our Athenian tyrants learned by experience. For the love of Aristogiton and the constancy of Harmodius had a strength which undid their power. The last refers to a pair of lovers who helped overthrow the tyrants of Athens. So there's yet another layer of along with the spiritual, blocking the spiritual connection. The whole repression of sexuality is an attempt to block literal bonding and friendships, male friendships, say in this example, because with male friendships, less likely to have wars. Less likely to have wars, which are typically a male thing, although more women are part of the army nowadays, but essentially it's a belligerent, male thing. So whether it's the aligning of one's spirituality or just simple friendships. The system, the government, the religions, the tyranny seeks to repress sexuality because that is kind of a gateway. It's a gateway drug to feeling, free and not being under the boot of the tyranny.
Another quote, I have often thought that the reason no one has yet been able to come up with a good word to describe the homosexualist, sometimes known as gay, fag, queer, etc., is because he does not exist. The human race is divided into male and female. Many human beings enjoy sexual relations with their own sex, many don't. Many respond to both. This plurality is the fact of our nature and not worth fretting about. True, and also there are some people that are, like, physically have a hermaphroditic thing going on. But anyway, he continues, today Americans are in a state of terminal hysteria on the subject of sex in general and of homosexuality in particular because the owners of the country, buttressed by a religion that they have shrewdly adapted to their own ends, regard the family as their last means of control over those who work and consume. For two millennia, women have been treated as chattel, while homosexuality has been made to seem a crime, a vice, an illness. And adding another quote from Vidal's book, but in the great world of pre-Christian cities, it never occurred to anyone that a homosexual act was less, quote, natural, unquote, than a heterosexual one. It was simply a matter of taste. From Archilochus to Apuleius, this acceptance of the way people actually are is implicit in what the writers wrote. I like that phrase, this acceptance of the way people actually are. How simple, just to accept people as they are if they can figure out who they are.
And one more thing about Tantra is that, again, it's actually another level of that is, again, along the spiritual energies that when one is seeking or attracted to someone else, in a way, it is really looking for that within oneself. So the other person becomes like a mirror, but behind the mirror is sort of the God self or the spiritual energy. So again, one is seeking that outwardly when it can be sought within. So we'll leave it at that for now. Thank you for listening. Be well.